big things out.
Oh, good.
I do it a lot in these podcasts, especially when I film, like, with Michelle.
Are you serious?
Yes.
What? Yes.
Just have to, you know, we're good with the mute button. Edit. Okay. We edit with the mute button. I'm just kidding. We've never had to do that before, mainly because I just cut the whole section of foul language out.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Compliance Live. I'm Amanda Hosenfeld, and I am welcoming our good friend, Will McSpadden, back. Will, welcome.
Hey. Hey.
We haven't had you on since the history of compliance.
When was that?
Oh, a while ago.
June?
It was quite a while. A pre-pandemic?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I think that's how we separate time
now. Such a different world.
Right. Yeah. It's like, well, did this happen before the pandemic or after the pandemic?
And then AP, you know, that those were, so this is going to be year one AP.
Right, no, like instead of like BC and AD.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, we're happy to have you back. And I'm really excited for this topic. Before we get started, Mark from Accounting would like everybody to know that this podcast is sponsored by Compliance Line. So thank you to Compliance Line for this space that we are able to present to you valuable compliance and ethics-related content. So thank you to Compliance Line.
Ta-da!
If you have not already, go ahead on out and follow us on social media. Gio, our CEO, and I just had an epic live tweet battle for one of our webinars this morning. It was really cool, and if you're missing out on our social media, you're missing out on all that. So. His was full of GIFs. He's too fast for me. I couldn't put GIFs into any of them. But we are at Twitter at Compliance Live and on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at our company page, Compliance Line. And there you're going to find tips and tricks and interviews and episodes of the ethics experts. We really think that you'll enjoy the content that you see there.
Don't use the term tips and tricks. That sounds so phony. It sounds like
I've said it literally on every podcast, so I will stop doing that. What would you suggest that I say
tips
instead?
And tricks? What? Let me find my thesaurus. It's somewhere. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Will.
Yeah, I'll work on it. I'll work on it.
Appreciate the suggestion. So we've got a really great show today. I've been really looking forward to this one. So a few months ago, I was writing an article for LinkedIn about kind of adaptive interview. And well, you're like, I have all this stuff on adaptive interview. And you gave me like this 40-page article that you'd written about the science of adaptive interview.
That's a little bit embellished, ladies and gentlemen out there. That is fake news.
36-page.
Okay, it wasn't 36.
Article.
It was maybe six.
So it was still a really in-depth article on kind of the science breakdown of an adaptive interview. What is adaptive interview, Will? And why do you love it so?
Pretty interesting, but it's only because I've been doing it, I don't know, however long I've been here, 5 years or so. Basically, it just means having a degree of flexibility and trying to take the mechanical nature out of report taking, because when somebody calls into us and when a client uses us, they use us because we're actual people who can do things versus, you know, having a recording system.
Right, we're not a robot, and we're not like just an impersonal.
If you have a fraud concern, please press 1.
It's terrifying. Now. Your robot voice is terrifying.
Yes. So basically, you have to be flexible with people because, in fact, it's sort of odd when you get a call from somebody and they're like, oh, you're a human?
Yes. And I think that's such a great point because we answer every call live, every single call we answer live. And sometimes we have quite extensive greetings to read per our clients, which is fine. That's how they want it done. So that's how we do it. But on the other end of that extensive greeting, they're like, oh, I thought you were recording. Have you ever gotten that before?
Oh, gosh, all the time.
All the time.
It seems like some people are just, like they're willing to accept, okay, I have to deal with a recording system, but then they're all pleased that it's actually a person. And so when the adaptive interview is really about allowing the people who take the call to use our brains, and I know it's shocking.
Whoa.
Yeah. To use what we understand about compliance, what we know about compliance, to try to help our clients to pick up on red flags, things like that.
And every single one of our risk specialists is a certified compliance analyst. So we really know what compliance is. We try our hardest to get to the heart of a compliance issue. And that is what adaptive interview is being able to recognize those small details and have the flexibility within the call to kind of expand on those small details so that our client really has an advocate in us. Sneaky compliance line. We got a copy of our competitor's script. When I train new hires, a lot of them will walk into the training classroom and they'll say, all right, I've done call center work before. Where's my script? What do I read?
Right.
And I kind of aghast look at them and I'm like, what do you mean a script? We don't have a script. We don't operate off of a script. And that kind of takes them by surprise. Why do you think that they are so surprised that Compliance Line doesn't have a script?
Well, because most call centers and probably even our competitors, well, in order to try to get things more uniform, it's easier to control things when they're more uniform. It's easier to measure them things when it's more uniform. So the interview process, they try to make it very uniform, try to make it so that somebody's just going down a list, 1, 2, 3, asking these questions. And it's sort of a lack of trust in the employees to be able to handle certain things.
So I love how that you said that, you know, that they just go down the list, 1, 2, 3, because we have the list. So for our audio participants, I'm going to now ruffle some paper. And for our people watching us on YouTube, I'm going to point this in the camera, but you're not going to be able to see it because it's very small script. We have an 8-question script from our competitors that kind of took me back. So one of our clients just made the smart move and came over to Compliance Line from a competitor. And when we were doing their setup, they were like, well, this is the script that we asked, insert competitor's name here, to use. And we said, yeah, we'll take this. But every single question that is asked on that script, we get in adaptive interview.
Yeah, it's just in the course of actually going through the interview process. Most of this stuff is covered, but yeah, it just feels weird looking at this.
Why does it feel weird?
Because just the way it's arranged, that it seems like the first thing that's being requested here is, you know, the main problem, and then afterwards on the back end it wants us to get all this information, which if somebody did their good job getting down the problem, they would have already gotten this information.
Okay, good point. So the very first question that is asked on our competitor's script is what?
Incident description.
So if I was working on our competitor, I may say, can you give me a description of the incident? What do we say here?
Well, that's sort of what we do. So basically, if we're doing a comparison, once we get to the point where we're actually taking down the details about a concern or complaint, we'll say, okay, well, I'm going to be taking down notes as you go into the details. So go ahead and tell me about what prompted you to call us today and what's going on. And at that point, then the person will give you the spiel or the narrative or disclosure or whatever you want to call it. And in the course of that, here at Compliance Line, we'll be the ones asking questions. Now, I would hope that our competitors would have enough sense to do that, but from the sort of questions that I see on this script, I'm assuming that they don't have the level of trust that, you know, my own supervisors have in me.
Right, so our competitors don't trust that their call center representatives, we call them risk specialists, mm-hmm. would ask the appropriate questions to get the details.
Right.
So they have to list out their questions
right.
on that piece right. of paper.
Right. And so just, you know, things asking for certain names and details, dates, things like that. Now, that just automatically comes to us when, for the compliance line folks, when somebody says, well, such and such happened, and then such and such happened. Well, automatically, just from the sort of training that we get, the sort of drilling that you do. The type of drilling that goes into our brain.
I noticed that you didn't change it once I called it rude.
We automatically think, you know, dates. I need dates for this. I need dates. If you see somebody saying, well, that man came over here, our minds automatically think, need names, you know, things like that. And so just asking for the incident description blankly, that's not going to work because you're still going to have holes in it. Especially in a report that's filled with things like customers or for healthcare providers, patients. Now, these people don't know the names of, staff members or employees of our clients. And so we would need to, at Compliance Line, if we got a lot of that, we would try to get down descriptions if necessary. We would have enough sense to do that. It doesn't seem to have any of that here on these scripted questions.
Yeah, so the scripted questions are like, what's their name? And if the answer is, I don't know, I'm curious as to, for our competitors, if that just stops, if that's the end of the conversation. Because that doesn't say, get a physical description. Mm-hmm. What's their ethnicity? What's their height? What's their, hair color, eye color? There's not... there's no follow-up questions that we would naturally ask. They're not listed there. So to your point on trust, at Compliance Line, we trust that you're going to ask those follow-up questions. If our competitors don't list it, is it asked?
Right. Yeah. So while we're still on the first question, which is the incident description, let's talk more about the adaptive interviewing side of things, because one of the aspects is, like you were saying, the small details, red flags that callers mention. They may not necessarily know that it's a compliance or ethics issue, but those of us here, we do know that. Mm-hmm. And I would hope, again, that our competitors would have that sense to know, but from the looks of this, I don't think so. So let's give an example.
Great.
All right, so let's think, a healthcare provider, alrighty?
Okay, with you.
I took a report at some point in the past, I think it was an RN, a nurse. She was reporting that she was like in her probationary period, and she had some sort of attendance issue where she clocked out late, and then another day where she didn't clock out to take her lunch. And as a result, they decided to just go ahead and get rid of her since she was already in her probationary period.
Okay.
So the bulk of her report is about how she's being treated unfairly. And in the course of discussing that, she then reveals that there's another nurse, perhaps the charge nurse who comes in on the weekends, who came in to clock in the mornings and would leave for the rest of the day, and then in the evenings would come in and clock back out. Now, the caller would tell me, well, it's unfair that she got to do that and I wasn't, treated, with the same sort of flexibility. Now, for us here, we know big red flag, that's fraud. That's time fraud right there. And so Compliance Line, let's say we get that call, well, we're going to ask a few more questions about that issue. We're going to hone in on it and try to figure out, witnesses, do you have any dates of the last time she did this or anything like that to help? Because, again, we're trying to help our clients and we're trying to keep them compliant. So.
Right. I remember you telling me this story because I have you stop by our training classes sometimes and share stories or of calls that you've received. And and I think this one was really interesting for our trainees because it taught them that a call like that has layers to it. And if we'd have followed this script, we'd have stopped with the favoritism part. Well, why does that nurse get to, clock out and or clock in and not be here all day where I was 30 minutes late going to lunch because I was busy with a patient and I got, fired for that. Why is there favoritism on the just surface level of that?
It looks like an HR issue.
Yeah, it looks like a favoritism. This is two employees that don't like each other. Mm-hmm. But one of them, you know, we learned from our benchmark reporting shows and also from the actual benchmark report that when somebody calls in, this is probably not the first incident that they've experienced. They, our callers usually, it takes them a certain level to even make the call in. So this is the first instance that they're calling about, but it's probably happened time and time again. So where we're seeing, or the caller is showing favoritism or talking about favoritism, what we see is that's time fraud, that's a compliance issue, because we're trained to look at more levels. If we'd have asked the questions that are on that piece of paper that you're holding, we would never have gotten to the time fraud part, which is the true compliance issue, a true compliance issue that the company wouldn't have been able to investigate had we not asked those extra questions.
Sometimes it's worth probing a little deeper. Sometimes it's worth not being mechanical and focusing on quantity over quality, which seems so strange, like in the American corporate world, which has seemed so much quantity over quality.
Right. Yeah, we drill that, to use your phrase, we drill that into our new hires as well. Like, we want you to worry about doing the best job that you can on that call, and your metrics, your numbers, your money making, that'll come later. We really want to make sure that the caller is taken care of on that end. All right, what else is on the list?
Okay, so the second question on the script is, how does the caller know about the incident?
All right, tell me what, that sounds reasonable. We would ask that, right? Tell me why that's problematic.
So there's a problem with that, especially when we're doing an anonymous report.
Okay.
Now, that would definitely, if I were to ask somebody who was trying to remain anonymous, this question, in most cases, that person would become suspicious at that point. They would want to know, why are you asking this? Because, you know, they know that that could end up revealing themselves. They don't want to say that they, you know, what sort of role they have in this issue that they're reporting, or they don't want to say that they work on this, in this department or on this unit, mm-hmm. or whatever. You know, maybe there are only two people on this unit or department, and they don't want to reveal themselves, so.
But it makes me wonder, like, if it's on that sheet, mm-hmm. if it's on that list or in that script from our competitor, are the call center agents penalized if they don't ask that question? So it's like, if that question doesn't make sense, mm-hmm. like, if the very first question that you ask is, tell me about the incident. Or, you know, however they phrase it there. And in the course of that conversation, you understand how they know about the incident. Well, it happened to me. I saw it. I was told about it from a friend. Yeah. Like, are right. those agents being penalized if they don't specifically ask that question? Or are the agents
so
smart
right,
enough?
Right after taking the incident down, you hear about it. You should be able to understand. I mean, some cases you do have to ask, how did you learn about this?
Right.
But in most cases, most calls I've taken, you can tell this is an employee, this is a customer.
It's an intuitive thing.
Right. And so that they heard this, witnessed it, it happened to them, somebody told them about it, you can figure that out on your own. Now, I can understand it being like a point on a thing, make sure you have this.
Yeah, hey, if you don't get it, get mm-hmm. the, you know, ask this question.
But only if it's somebody who, you know, in the course of getting down the report, we could perceive would be all right providing this information. Sometimes you get callers who are very frightened.
Yes.
And they will have you provide basically a detailed description of how they'll remain anonymous and mm-hmm. how their information gets protected. And, you know, in those cases, you don't want to say things that are going to be like, okay, goodbye, click, you know.
Right.
Which can happen if you push too hard?
Oh, that's a great question. I just thought about like six questions I wanted to ask. How do you keep from pushing too hard?
Gosh, that's
that's hard. I'll let you think about it.
That's more of an art than a science.
Is it? Oh, okay, yeah. I got it. That's another show. So like a whole other show.
No, it's it has to. It flows into adaptive interview. Which, again, I feel like, now that I'm thinking of those terms, it really does feel more like an art than something you can calculate out scientifically. You know, it's dealing with people, and so you have to be able to perceive people. You have to be able to perceive their emotions, perceive their tone of voice, the cadence, the rhythm, you know. And you can kind of understand, okay, they're afraid of this. They're too prideful to be asked this. Things like that.
Yeah. So there's a question on there that I think flows really well into the point that we were previously talking about, and I don't remember which question it was, because you're looking at the paper and I'm not, but it's like, do you expect this to happen again in the next 24 hours? So that's the same kind of thought behind. Do they have to ask that question? Is the agent penalized if they're not asked that question? Is it? It's on the script, so...
So, yes, let me give you an example.
Yes,
so,
please.
All right, somebody calls in and in the previous report and says that I was wrongfully terminated. Well, if I'm having to go through this list and ask all these questions in this order, after that person's already told me they're terminated, I have to ask the question, will the incident occur within the next 24 hours?
That's an immediate, like...
Well, that's like, makes the person think, have you been listening?
Are you not
to
even
me?
Listening not to even... my story?
Yes, and so, and it causes a breach of trust, and it makes it sort of difficult to get any further information when you ask questions like that, which show, are you tuned in with what I'm actually saying?
And just to be clear, like, that's not a bullet, that is a number on that list. It is not a, if they say this, then it's not kind of like a sub part of the outline. That is a major question that they ask, and it just makes me wonder, like, do you not trust your agent enough to say, oh, that's, they were terminated, so that's not a question that I need to
relevant.
Ask.
You know, even this, the framing of the question, will the incident occur with, well, an incident, you know, that's like a singular thing. Now,
that's a good
point.
That's
not always the case when we, with our calls. I would say probably half of them have more than one incident mentioned. And so that's sort of, or maybe not a singular incident, maybe it's a systemic issue,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so the framing of the question, maybe we could ask something similar, but we would have to reword it. We, you know, here at Compliance Line, we have our own questions to ask, but we have a degree of flexibility, a part of adaptive interviewing. We can sort of reframe some of the words or...
Yeah, but it's, to your point, like, we have our own questions to ask, but none of them are written down in a way that we like, oh, this is a fraud call, ask the following questions. Mm-hmm. This is a sexual harassment call, ask the following questions. Like, we're trained to be able, to your point, to pick up on those real human elements of a situation, of a caller, and ask questions according to that. Mm-hmm. There are some questions that we would ask for patient care that we would never ask for sexual harassment, or that we would ask for time fraud, that we would never ask for substance abuse.
Or a question that is framed for an employee, you know, when that doesn't make sense to ask it when you have a customer on the phone. So,
yeah.
Things like that. So I'm looking down here at... again, there's another question here. What documentation is available? Again, that goes back to the person answering the phone. Do they have enough sense to know when it's a situation that requires documentation? Meaning, like, if I have a report where somebody's telling me about a post that's made on Facebook that's, you know, revealing a patient's identification for a healthcare provider, HIPAA violation, privacy breach. Okay, well, I should have enough sense to say, did you manage to get a screenshot of this? Something like that. So mm-hmm. I have enough sense to do that. Now, if somebody's telling me something very nebulous, saying that, you know, so-and-so is going out back and smoking weed during their breaks.
you have documentation to prove that?
Yeah,
that, it's not that's, a. It's that's a sort harder. Of a
strange question.
Yeah, I always kind of think of when I'm training. I always think of like sexual harassment. Would I ask that question of somebody that's been sexually harassed, who's in a traumatic part or time in their life? Would that be an appropriate question to ask, and let that kind of be my Geiger counter on if I would ask it now? You know,
right. I mean, of course, if I'm in the course of taking a sexual harassment report down, if I'm hearing from the caller that some of this sexual harassment is taking place, like, through text messages...
There you go.
...then you would ask about that sort of documentation. If you have somebody reporting a fraud, maybe you ask, do you have copies of check stubs, you know, actual stuff that... You know, you have enough sense to know when you're dealing with, like, a paperwork issue, something that's been recorded, or just an interpersonal thing.
Right. And I also think it's about how you ask it, too, which, to your point, is like an art. take your example of inappropriate text messages.
Right.
You know, would you be willing to share those? Would you be willing to send those in for documentation, as opposed to, well, do you have documentation of this? Because that, I mean, it can come down to your tone and what you read off of a caller is their willingness to provide that information. If you just ask it, how was that question phrased?
What documentation is available?
So, if I was calling to report a traumatic incident and you asked me what documentation is available, that's gonna rub me the wrong way. It's gonna come off as maybe indelicate. I don't know a better.
Yeah.
Insensitive, maybe. So it.
Right, right. And so yes, if that were, you know, if this was to be a question that we were being asked by a client to ask, you know, people who call in to us here at Compliance Line, there would always be a way to reword it in a better, you know, way. And also, after listening to somebody, right, being able to understand what parts of your complaint do you likely have the ability to have documentation for.
Right. So. What else is on there?
Okay, so then we have all these questions, which I was referring to earlier, where it feels like it's this sort of back-end issue, that in the course of getting the incident description, you should have already gotten things like the names of potential perpetrators, the names of people you reported it to, names of people who witnessed it. Those you should have, at least at Compliance Line, in my frame of thinking, I think that in the course of going through the report, you should have already gotten those. But here, in these questions, we're seeing, you know, what's the name and job title of the reported individual? Who was notified? Was management notified? So these are like, you know, I wouldn't mind if I had these questions here, but they weren't questions to ask. They were things to fill in after I took the report. Maybe that would make sense here. But to actually go back through these questions after you already took the report, presumably after you heard the names of these people, you know, that makes you think, if you're hearing these and you're being asked, can you tell me the name of the subject of your report? Well, I already told you that
10 minutes ago.
Yeah. Who did you notify? I already told you that, too. You know, some of these questions, involved parties, well, what does that mean? You know, does that mean witnesses? Does that mean people who were like accomplices to the wrongdoer? Does this mean somebody you confided in? I mean, so there's some weird things there that I feel could be more specific. You should allow your person, risk specialist, call center representative, whatever, to be able to use their own brains do you have any witnesses? Do you have any, you know, people who are involved in some other way contributing to this problem? Do you have somebody who's concealing this? You should be able to frame it using your own words.
Right.
Basically.
You know, ultimately, we want to get actionable information mm-hmm. to our client. And if you start your conversation off with, no, I've just got to get this list of questions from you. I've just got to ask these from you specifically. You're already not starting off on the best relationship with your caller.
Oh, and at the very end of the last question is, how do you know about the hotline? That's all right.
I mean, we ask that.
Yeah.
We ask that, but we ask that in the front part of our interviews. So when I train, here's a little inside information for our listeners, for all four of you. When we separate kind of our interview process into the preliminary interview, where we get all of the name and the title of the individual that's making the report, the location where it happens, how they heard about the number to give them a call, and then kind of we stop that part of the interview and we say, all right, now here's what we're going to do. I'm going to, and every agent does it differently or phrases it differently, but it's, now I want you to tell me what happened. I'm going to make some notes. I'm going to stop you and ask you some questions. I appreciate you being, you know, honest and forthcoming and however you want to, however they want to phrase it. And I apologize for interrupting. I was like, sorry, I'm going to interrupt you, but I have some questions to ask.
I do that too.
So, I mean, ultimately, I don't think that this is a bad list of questions, but I don't, from our competitor, but I don't think it's as...
I don't think it's something that should be done mechanically,
should
be done without thought.
Yeah, I don't believe it's... It really takes into consideration a human being that is feeling some type of way, otherwise they wouldn't call. I mean, we do get compliment calls, of course, and requests for information, but the majority of our call are there is a compliance or ethics or a perceived compliance or ethics issue. They're speaking up, and they need to feel comfortable to do so, and we need to give them that opportunity in the least restricting way possible.
Now, I'll tell you what, when I look at this, you know, it really looks like a list made up by an actual investigator. You know, these are very
okay.
much an investigator's questions and, you know, about, you know, documentation. Will this incident occur within the next 24 hours? And then outlining names, dates. And so this is somebody who knows what they need, and so they're asking these things directly. And just that one size doesn't fit all. People. Every person has a different type of personality, and they're not going to be able to forgive somebody who's having to backtrack, ask them questions that they already answered, mm-hmm. things like that.
Yeah, those eight questions don't apply to every mm-hmm. incident situation or every personality mm-hmm. situation. So while it's maybe a good starting point,
yeah.
It's not necessarily the be-all and end-all of the reporting process.
Right, right. Yep. You need to have faith in the people that you have taking these sort of reports down, that they at least faith in and give them good training.
Oh, you're yeah. supposed to say that because I'm the trainer. Well, I always learn a lot when you're in the studio. When will you come back?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I appreciate you coming back in and sharing your perspective on adaptive interview. Again, thanks, Will, for being on. Thank you to Compliance Line. Follow us on our social medias. For now, I'm Amanda Hosenfeld.
Oh, and I'm Will McSpadden.
And stay compliant. I like how you're like, oh, but please don't do the finger guns.
Oh, this is hostile work environment.